Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to This Week in the Hawks. It's been a while, I apologise. Things have been a little bit out of my control, but look, we're here now and we are almost at the end of the regular season. Yes, yes, finally. Oh, this regular season has taken for an absolute eternity. And to be fair, it is, because, you know, 82 games is a lot of games to play from basically November to early April. So we're here and the Hawks are looking interesting, coming off a big time win against the Cavaliers there. Three game win streak now against the most this is probably the most unlikeliest three game winning streak of the entire season, given everything that has happened. Boston at Cleveland and then against Cleveland in a game where you know, everyone's pretty much playing for the opposition side. So it's been very, very strange. But look, you take what you can get at this stage of the season. Looking at the standings, we have a few seeds locked in the East. I believe Washington has been locked into the four seed for a day or two now. And outside of that, kind of everything else is to still be decided, which is kind of really fun. Because you look at the West. The West is set. Like, it's been set for a little bit now, but it's kind of been officially set in stone. Like, we have Golden State, Portland, round one. Grizzlies and Spurs, the 2-7 matchup, that's been done for a little while now. Houston, OKC, 3-6, that's good to go. The only thing to sort out really is, well, we know the Clippers and Jazz are playing each other, but who's going to be home court, who's going to be the 5 seed? That's the only thing that has to be decided in the West. Whereas the East, it's still a complete toss-up between 6 and 8, really. With the Heat kind of look on the outside looking in there from the 9 seed, needing the Pacers or the Bulls to drop a game here. So, and of course, the race for the top seed in the East, Boston and Cleveland, which I think Cleveland has chosen the right priorities as such. You know, rest players and, you know, where we'll just work with whatever we've got. So, you know, Celtics take back the 1 seed. They have one game to not mess it up. As such, they play the Bucks on Wednesday. So they control their own destiny, the Celtics do. But from the Hawks' perspective, you know, they're a game ahead of the Bucks. Well, half a game ahead. The Bucks have played their 81st game. The Hawks play later tonight against the Hornets. But if the Hawks should win that game, and we're led to believe that Kemba Walker has been shut down for the rest of the season, so Brian Roberts will be the starting point guard there. So that's one less thing for the Hawks to worry about in that regard. But, you know, should they win this game tonight, the Hawks, they'll be 1.5 games up, essentially. No, that's not correct. They'll be 1 game up on the Bucks. Well, they clinch tonight, the Hawks, if they win. That's as simple as that. So I know you've probably seen all the, like, playoff scenarios. If a team wins and X team loses, blah 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 blah, playoff implication. For the Hawks, it's very simple. Win tonight and they are the 5 seed. So that's very simple to me. If they lose these 2 games against the Hornets and the Pacers on the final day there, and the Bucks win those 2, they can jump them. Pacers can still technically jump Atlanta as well, because they've that tiebreaker in Pacers Hawks is yet to be decided. That'll be decided tomorrow. Whether it will ultimately matter is another thing, but we can basically lock in Wizards Hawks first round. It looks like that's what we're looking at. Wizards, like we mentioned, they were the first team in the East to lock themselves into a seed. John Wall is carrying a little bit of an injury. I believe it's a calf issue or something similar to that. So he's legitimately been resting games. So will he be ready to go for the playoffs? I'm sure he will. But, you know, we can get into, you know, that matchup another time. But it looks like we're looking at Hawks Wizards, which I don't like. I think this is probably the worst of the teams the Hawks could have faced in round one. It's the one I had feared for a good while. I've been campaigning for Toronto in their first round, but to be fair, the Hawks have not played this new Raptors team as such. Yes, they've played Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker Raptors, but they haven't played with Lowry, DeRozan, Tucker, Ibaka, Damari Carroll, all these players as a whole. So even though, you know, the Hawks won that season series against the Raptors 2-1, and you know, they've had so their, you know, you look at that matchup and say, oh look, Raptors, you know, they have struggles, you know, containing Dwight and this kind of thing. But you know, we just, it's hard to say, because you know, the Hawks have no track record or experience against that full strength new Raptors team as such. So it's difficult to say whether that would be the better matchup or not. You know, the Raptors have been rolling. You know, they are only two, I know they're locked into the three seed now, but they're only two games back of the Celtics, you know, for that one seed. So, you know, again, they can't move up, they can't move down, the Raptors, but, you know, even still, I think that's quite the achievement, all things considered. It was a long, remember the days when the Hawks, you know, they won that game against the Raptors at Phillips, and they were one game behind for home court advantage for the four seed. They are now, have a look, they are 7.5 games back of the Raptors now. So that just kind of shows you how wrong things went for the Hawks, and how the Raptors did kind of find their way. They're 8-2 over the last 10. The Raptors are 3-game winning streak as of right now. So it's hard to say. Well, to be fair, the best matchup out of those top four, probably Boston. Yeah, Boston have a lot of rebounding issues. They have a lot of playoff issues, you know, outside of Isaiah Thomas, who's going to score. So I wouldn't have minded if the Hawks had fallen to the 7th seed. But look, this is where we are. The interesting wrinkle now that, you know, I watched last night's Cleveland-Miami game. Huge, huge game for both teams. Cavs decided that they didn't want to play Kyrie and LeBron. You know, understandable. They played a lot of minutes in Atlanta. But for Miami, it was a must-win game, because if they lost, that was it. Their playoff hopes were done. And so they need to come out. They eventually did. But this is interesting, because now Boston's the one seed. If the Hawks manage to find a way past Washington in round one, and that's a fairly large if, you know, there's a lot of issues there. And Boston advanced from the one seed against whoever they play, Milwaukee, Indiana, Chicago, Miami, whoever it may be. The Hawks will be looking down the barrel of the Celtics in round two, and that's going to be interesting, because that's a very winnable series, you know, you have to say. It seems like the Celtics are more of a regular season team, but, you know, only time will tell. I do believe the Heat would give them a fantastic run for their money in round one, should the Heat kind of make it. But, you know, that depends on the Pacers losing their last game against the Hawks. But let's kind of get to that, because, you know, the Hawks can clinch tonight with the win against the Hornets. Should they do that, it's most likely that the Hawks will rest, you know, which is fairly obvious. You know, Paul Millsap has been nursing an injury. I'm sure, you know, other people are carrying knocks here and there. Malcolm Delaney's a little beat up. Cephalosha still hasn't come back yet, although, you know, Chris Vivlamore of the AGC reporting that, you know, he's close. And Thabo said he was close, you know, and he's participated in 5v5. In practice, so signs are pointing to that. So I don't know if you want to give him a run, whether it's tonight or tomorrow against the Pacers, even if kind of Millsap, Schroeder, you know, the such rest on Wednesday. Maybe you want to give Cephalosha a little run, just to see how, you know, just get some fitness up, because he has missed a good chunk of games here, Cephalosha. The second kind of stretch, he's missed quite a number of games. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun, man. I just love this time of the year. Everyone, you know, people got something to play for. It's just such a different feel now than obviously it was, you know, back in January or December. You know, this stuff is on the line. You know, seasons are on the line. Coaching jobs are on the line. You know, it's just fantastic this time. I love when there's something to play for, which, you know, maybe, you know, if the season is shortened in the future, we have much more of this. But, you know, that's a topic for another day, I reckon. But hey, let's get into some of the game talk. Where I was going to talk about the one game because it's a fairly decent game. Cavaliers, Hawks on Sunday afternoon. Hawks coming from a 26-point deficit in the fourth quarter to rally and win in overtime. Oh my gosh, what a game. What a game to be to watch live. This is an absolute treat. I'm so happy that this game was on early in Europe, where I am situated, because it was, oh man, during the game, the Hawks were making their comeback, and I thought, this is just a giant tease. I was reminded of the game the Hawks played last season against the Timberwolves when they were down by 38 or so at home, and they started making the comeback, and then they got within 1 point, and then Andrew Wiggins took over and kind of finished the game. But you were down, you were defeated, lock this loss in, and then they come back and like, maybe there's a chance, and then like, you get inflated to get deflated in a sense. But and I was expecting the same here. It's like, why am I getting my hopes up, that they could actually win this game, because they're just gonna it's just gonna be let down again. But credit to them, they came through. There is a number, how did this happen? Okay, so I guess a good way to start this game is, why were the Hawks down by so many points? Why were they so outclassed by the Cavaliers? And there's a few reasons for that. Cleveland hit a lot of three-pointers, especially in the first quarter. The first quarter where the Cavs outscored the Hawks 38-21. So, at least it wasn't 40, which it damn looked like it was getting. But the Cavs hit 7 of their 19 threes in the first quarter. People not picking people up. Pick and roll defense wasn't great. Transition, the Cavs got quite a number of opportunities, which is kind of an interesting dynamic that they create. You got Kyrie storming into the paint, LeBron, and then you've got people like Korver, or even if it's James, going into at the rim. You can have Kyrie hang out at the three. Kevin Love, Channing Frye, who was very good in this game as well for the little time he actually did play, as it turned out. But just so many three-point weapons, and when you surround LeBron with these kind of players, these kind of things happen. But the Hawks could have played it better. I find it so interesting that the Cavs get a lot of their offense kind of I have no stats to back this up, but I'm just looking from just watching the game. The Cavs play a lot higher pace and tempo than I would say the Hawks do. Dennis Schroeder, he likes to walk that ball up, and you're getting past that half court line with 18, 17 seconds, maybe 19 seconds left. Cavs much more kind of rushed. I think it just creates a lot more for them, You have, Kyrie putting pressure. You have LeBron putting pressure in transition, get the rebound and go. And, both of those guys can get to the rim. Both those guys can shoot, LeBron to a lesser extent. But, you got LeBron charging in like a freight train. Either he's going to the line, maybe a foul is called. He's dunking at home, as he did a couple of times, coast to coast last night. defense sets up, but it just absolutely collapses on them. And then, look at that, Kyle Korver is wide open because four Hawks players are in the paint trying to stop LeBron or Kyrie, or hey, Kyrie's open. So I love their offensive, how they go about their business, the Cavs. Maybe a few too many three-pointers. I'm looking at here, 46 three-point attempts, whatever. But I just like that dynamic that they create. They've got so many options. I like when they kind of run a little more. But that was a problem for the Hawks. Defensively, things weren't great. To be fair, Dennis Schroeder lost Kyrie Irving a few times. TP, Torian Prince. Not always making that rotation he needed to, that's just a rookie thing, but stuff like that. Interesting to see the Cavs, with Channing Frye, who a very good three-point shooter. He'll kind of uh, he'll kind of fade in off the screen and off the screen. He'll execute a screen and fade, is what I'm trying to say. But you know, he went for a few ducks to the rim, and sure, when the Hawks are expecting to, you know, have to cover him from behind the tree, you know, he just makes that darting run to the rim. He's like, hey, let's go. And, you know, he got two dunks out of that. So all these kind of things added up. And, you know, Hawks' offense wasn't great. You know, it was funny because Dwight Howard had the most success on the offensive end. You know, a consistent success, you know, going into the post against Channing Frye. But when it didn't come off, it just kind of, things slowed down. And guys are kind of just standing around. And I wrote on Hawkshoop.com, hey, check that site out. You know, we make good stuff. I included a possession where, you know, Dwight's going in the post. And once that kind of ball goes to him, there's a lot of standing around. And nothing's really going on. You know, there's no real man movement. There's no, you know, Dwight's not really looking to make a pass. I know maybe you'd prefer him to back down Frye in that case, but just offense, you know, maybe Schroeder could have got to the rim a little bit more. You know, he got there a few times, but maybe not nearly enough. I do think Kyrie is there to be taken off the dribble. Maybe he could have done that a little more instead of chucking up 4 3-pointers, making only one of them. You know, that's a thing. You know, Tim Hardaway Jr., you know, took a few poor shots here and there. You know, not a lot of ball movement. You know, Hawks only tallied 15 assists in the first three quarters, having tallied 39 in total with the bench unit and second and third unit, basically, in Cleveland on Friday. So, you know, it's very strange. Or is it? Anyways, for all these reasons, Hawks go into the fourth quarter down by 26 points. And, you know, Bud starts a unit of Jose Calderon, Kent Bazemore, Mike Dunleavy, Ersan Ilyasova, and Mike Muscala to start the fourth quarter there. And, you know, I included more footage of this. Straight away, the ball was moving, the men were moving, cutting action, you know, lots of off-the-ball movement. Straight away, you know, and not a timeout or anything. Just fourth quarter started, go time. You know, that they were going, moving that ball, you know, and straight away they made a 9-0 run. And Ty Lue, you know, even with LeBron, you know, he started LeBron for this fourth quarter. You know, like you could almost question why. It's like, why are you starting? Why is LeBron need to play right now? You know, he leads the league in minutes played. His team are up by 26 in the fourth quarter. The Hawks starters are not in the game. Why does he need to be in there? But, you know, Ty Lue didn't mess around. After, you know, quite quickly, with over 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, brought back in Kyrie, brought back in Kevin Love. You know, to his credit, you know, some teams, you know, they mess around, they leave players out maybe longer than they need to or something. But, you know, Ty Lue was not messing around. You know, he wanted this win. I don't believe for a second that they didn't want this win. Why would you risk an injury, you know, to LeBron? What if he had tore, you know, what if he had gone down on his twisted an ankle or something in the first 2 minutes of that fourth quarter? He's like, well, why did he need to be out there? You know, 20, you're up by 26. You know, it's just, so Ty Lue was not messing around, but Hawks kept coming. They got the stops they needed. You know, some good stops. Ilyasova had a great one on Kyrie Irving there in the fourth as well. They just hunked, you know, the Hawks. And, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. post-game, you know, he kind of, let me see if I can find the quote, because it was really nice. So, quote Tim Hardaway Jr., quote, "We were down 26 and a lot of the fans were leaving. We just said to ourselves in the timeouts and huddles that we're all we got. You know, go out and play for each other. Play for the city. Play for the fans that are staying here." When we came out with the win. So, a little bit of motivation there. Fans were leaving a little early, you know. I can't blame them, because, you know, the Hawks were bad, quite bad in this game. You know, Cavaliers really picked them apart. You know, their ball movement was excellent for the first three quarters. Just, they played the game they needed to play, the Cavs. You know, I think they definitely had Friday night in mind. But the Hawks kept digging into that lead, eventually ending on a 16-4 run, capped. Well, actually, before we get to the Millsap buzzer beater, there's quite a few controversial moments to go through first. I guess we'll start with I guess we'll start with that 5 second violation call that was on LeBron. It didn't look like he got off in time, but look, he disagrees. Hawks get the ball, you know, but we're kind of still at a point in the game where, you know, it should be in Cleveland's control still. But, you know, right after LeBron fouls Tim Hardaway Jr. on a shooting attempt, you know, Timmy goes 1-for-2 at the line. The Cavs, you know, the Cavs are still up by 3 with 13 seconds left after that second free throw there from Timmy. And, you know, up 3, 13 seconds left, you're going to the free throw line. You know, you should be in fairly decent control. And, you know, Kyrie Irving went to the line, hits both of them, puts the Cavs up by 5 points. I think there's 8 seconds left or something. Hawks call a timeout. Millsap, you know, out of the timeout. Hardaway Jr. inbounding the ball to Millsap in the left corner. LeBron fouls him, shooting a 3. Second blunder in a row there for LeBron. Maybe third, even if you want to count the, you know, fouling Tim Hardaway Jr. But, you know, he got him fairly good. You know, it was a foul. I don't think he really had any qualms with that. I think he knew he got him. Millsap sinks all 3 free throws, but it's a 2-point game still, and the Cavs have the ball. 8 seconds left. As soon as Millsap hits that free throw, Cavs do not call a timeout. I don't know if they had any or not, but you know, LeBron, Kyrie's kind of streaking to LeBron's right, heading into the left corner. And LeBron passes it to him, and instantly Millsap and Bazemore go out to trap him. They tie him up. The jump ball is called, but you know, looking at the replay and looking at pictures afterwards, both Millsap and Bazemore are out of bounds. the feet are out of bounds. Unfortunate call. I understand why it was made. You know, there's one official there, and he's trying to see if the ball, you know, if Irving is being fouled or if the ball is actually being tied up, and you know, call for the jump ball. He's not necessarily looking at their feet. You know, it's just hard. You know, in that moment, I can understand why he didn't make that call, or maybe he didn't see it, because no other official is seeing if those feet are out of bounds. But unfortunate for the Cavs. But anyway, Kent Bazemore kicks Paul Millsap out for the jump ball, and the officials do too, to be fair. I think it's Irving that actually tips the ball, but it falls to Muscala, who gets the ball to Millsap near the baseline. Millsap rises up, sinks it at the buzzer, and the most unlikely of overtime periods is about to take place. But it was so cool, just like Darvin Ham, you know, these guys are rushing out, you know, the coaches, you never give much away, you know, to be fair. But Darvin Ham was ecstatic. Taylor Jenkins as well was really into it. I had the video on hawkshoop.com. You should check it out. It's really cool to just see Taylor Jenkins and Darvin Ham just everyone's into it. You know, when you're down 26, you know, obviously, you know, things are a little different. You know, it's different circumstances, but it was really cool to see them just so into it. It was just such a great game. In overtime, didn't things didn't really start well. Hawks offense kind of really bogged down. That momentum was kind of, in a weird way, kind of killed, in the sense by having to, you know, go into another period. But Cavs start with the quick 5-0 run. Hawks no strangers to being down in overtime this year. They went down by 7, a 7-0 run against the Blazers earlier this season in overtime, before they recovered for the 12-0 run. But you know, Malcolm Delaney, you know, only started playing, got called upon in the fourth quarter there. Dennis Schroeder and Dwight Howard actually not playing in the fourth quarter or overtime in this game, but we'll get to that in a bit. But you know, Delaney gets the Hawks off the bounce, down by 3, around 2 minutes 19 seconds left, and then LeBron is called for a 6th foul, going up for a rebound against Paul Millsap. Just a horrible call. And you know, it's done even worse justice that the last 2 minute report came out and said that was the correct call. That's an absolute joke, and I don't know why they how they can defend that call. It was terrible. LeBron should have stayed in the game, but you know what? That was, you know, picked up the sixth foul unjustly, but you know it happens. I included a few examples of shady officiating in this game. You know, there's a it really does go both ways. You know, I'm looking at a replay here. Deron Williams, you know, the refs are right there, and they didn't see that Jose Calderon very clearly did not touch the ball and tip it into the backcourt. You know, Williams just fumbles it back, and even in overtime, where Paul Millsap is just, there's no contact on LeBron James going to the rim, and he and Bud, who I'm amazed Bud didn't get technical in this game. You know, they were, he was upset about a lot of calls, Coach Bud, and the fact that he did not get a technical foul was really amazing. But he lost a little bit, as did Millsap, to be fair, when this foul on this phantom foul on LeBron was called, but that stuck LeBron to the free throw line. But then, you know, minus LeBron, you know, it's Kyrie and Kevin Love, but Kyle Korver comes through and hits a huge three pointer, put the Hawks back up. oh, that hurts. Put the Cavs back up by one, and Kevin Love goes to the free throw line after being fouled, hits one of two, so the Hawks are down by two. And then some kind of after that, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. comes up the floor, aggressive, goes straight to the paint, whips it out to Mike Muscala, who hits a three-pointer, his second big three of the game. You know, he hit a big one in the fourth quarter there as well, late on, to kind of bring the Hawks within four. And once Muscala gave the Hawks that lead back, that was it. You know, that was the lead that the Hawks would hold on to. Well, the lead the Hawks would hold on to, but not the number of points. kind of out of a timeout. Kyrie, you know, ball's trying to get to Kyrie. You know, Bazemore sensed he was a little tired. He was kind of saying post game, jumped the pass, barely made the layup, but it went in, put the Hawks up by three. And then right after that, Kyrie charges down the court, barrels into Paul Millsap and gets the foul call, one that he was absolutely not happy about. And you know, the last 2 minute report came out and said that was the wrong call, the charge on Millsap. But again, Cavs did get shafted when you look at the grand scheme of things. You know, the calls that were made, the officiating did go both ways, but the Cavs definitely got the short end of the stick, the shite end of the stick, you know. So, you know, and that's just being honest. But yeah, after that, you know, the Cavs have to foul. And yeah, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. sinks two at the line. Kyrie, you know, he makes a layup, and he banks a three as well for good measure at the buzzer. But didn't matter. Hawks got through this one, 126-125. Yeah, it really was just such a bizarre game. It really was. I don't know. I give this year's team a lot of stick. You know, I'm a big fan of last year's team. I believed in last year's team. I thought, you know, they could, you know, bar any matchup against the Cavaliers, I thought they could win, you know. But this year's team I haven't liked at all. But I have to say that they've probably played more entertaining games. They've probably given us more entertaining games than last year's team did. You know, you think of the game against the Spurs, the Rockets, the Cavs here, the Knicks. You know, this Hawks team has given us some good games. That doesn't mean they're a good team, but they have given us some very entertaining games. And, you know, this game, the four overtime game, you know, those games will last for fans, I think, for a long time. Especially this one, because Hawks PR had a load of great tweets post-game. This, of course, was the third comeback from 20 or more points from the Hawks this season. The other two were the Bucks earlier this year in Milwaukee, down 20 at the half. Houston, of course, in Houston, fourth quarter, down 20. And now this game, Atlanta's a third team in NBA history to come back from at least 26 points down the fourth quarter and win the game. This is from Hawks PR here. The Hawks are the first team to come back from 26 down the fourth since the LA Lakers came back against the Mavericks in 2002. And then besides the Lakers and the Hawks, the only other team to come back from at least 26 points in the fourth was Milwaukee at Atlanta in 77 there. So And then Mark Stein kind of finishing off with, NBA teams have won their last 1,005 games when entering the fourth quarter with a 25 or more point lead before Cleveland's unraveling today. Hashtag wow. So, yeah, very, 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 just, yeah, it is one for the memory. You know, that game will be one for the ages. But just incredible. Let me read off some stats individually. Paul Millsap, 22 points. Tim Hardaway Jr., 21 points. Mike Muscala, 12 points, 5 of 6 shooting from the field. And, you know, the Hawks did all this without Dennis Schroeder and Dwight Howard in the fourth quarter. And, it's really interesting because, you know, without Dennis and Dwight in Cleveland on Friday, you know, Hawks, a season-high 39 assists, and they come out with the win. First three quarters of this game, Dennis and Dwight are playing. Hawks have only 15 assists, and they're down by 26. So without Dennis and Dwight in the fourth, the Hawks had 15 assists in the fourth they had 14 assists in the fourth quarter alone, and they ended up with 31 in total. So that's six. So that's they had 16 assists from the fourth in the fourth and overtime, and they win the game without Dennis and Dwight. Now, I would like to kind of preface that with saying that in a series where Tristan Thompson is involved, you know, Thompson wasn't involved in this game, you need Dwight Howard, because, you know, as has been proved in the last two seasons, Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, and LeBron James have caused the Hawks many nightmares on the rebounding. So in a series that does involve Tristan Thompson, you do need Dwight Howard. And, you know, Dwight had a decent game. You know, he had 19 points. He was the only, like, even when the Hawks, you know, the offense was bad in the first three quarters. But this, you know, Dwight was actually the kind of one player who could, you know, he could actually go to and get a bucket, you know, in the circumstances. I don't know what to make of the whole thing with Dennis Schroeder. I really don't. There's a great quote from Malcolm Delaney via Chris Vivlamore. I want to read it because it's really, really good. So, when we go away from it, ish being ball movement, as everyone can see, we are not a good team at all. And I just don't think Dennis Schroeder really facilitates the Hawks' offense. You know, I look at Mike Muscala, you know, and I said this, you know, in the first quarter of this game on Twitter when Hawks were already down quite a bit, that kind of Mike Muscala, other than kind of Paul Millsap, is the only other player that, you know, who runs the Hawks offense every single time he's in the game. You know, he never holds the ball for too long. He doesn't really take awful shots. If there's nothing on for him, he'll pass and move. He sets a screen cap, tries to make things happen. He'll look for other teammates. You know, he just does all the things that the Hawks want, that, you know, the Hawks do. I can look at Mike Muscala and say he is the embodiment of what the Hawks do. You know, I can look at his way of play. It's like he has been tutored in this system and he plays by this system every single time he's in the game. You know, I can't look at any other people and say, I can't look at Tim Hardaway Jr. and say that. You know, to me, you know, he does move the ball sometimes, but, you know, he does take his fair share of, you know, bad shots that, you know, he should be moving the ball. I can't look at Dennis Schroeder and say, yeah, he's running the Hawks offense. You know, he looks for his own too much. You know, he's too erratic. He's too for himself. And takes some really bad shots. I don't look at him and say he runs the Hawks offense the way Budenholzer wants him to. You know, I can look at Paul Millsap and say, you know, he does try his, you know, he does run the system. He does screen a move. He does take the good, you know, the better shots. He does look to pass the ball. I can't look at Dwight Howard and say he runs the Hawks offense. Now, to be fair, he's new-ish at this stage to the Hawks offense, but I can look at Mike Muscala and say, yep, he absolutely does everything I would imagine the coaches ask him to do. And I want to give Mike Muscala full credit for that. You know, he has struggled big time in the kind of the middle slash near the end part of this regular season, but, you know, he's, ever since that kind of game with the Bulls where he hit three-pointers there, he's really come on. But yeah, just Mike Muscala, he just runs the Hawks offense. You can look on, in this piece on hawkshoop.com about this Cavs game, I include lots of examples of plays where Mike Muscala does all these things that the Hawks like to do. So yeah, I recommend checking that out. It's interesting looking over these last three games with the Hawks. The big thing I'm noticing with the average here, well, 39% three-point shooting is one, but the 32 assists, I think, is absolutely huge. Hawks have not been good in the ball movement department. It's down a lot this year. They are currently ninth in assists per game. They were third last year, I believe, and they were second of the season before that. So they've come down a lot. Again, I do believe it's personnel, because of personnel. But that's encouraging against the Celtics and the Cavs twice. You know, no matter who's been playing or who's not been playing, I do think that's encouraging. But look, I guess with that we'll kind of wrap things up. You know, next time we speak, I'll probably do something on Friday rather than Saturday, but because of course the regular season will be over, and you know, Hawks finish the regular season Wednesday against the Pacers on the road, but tonight their final regular season game at home is against the Hornets. I believe Kemba Walker is out, and I think this game is very important for not only the Hawks but the who can clinch of course tonight with the 5 seed, but you know, the Heat and that 7-8-9 scrap, even Bucks in there as well. You know, Hawks win tonight, they have no need to play their best players in Indiana tomorrow, and of course the Heat need a loss from the Pacers or the Bulls, and the Bulls play the flipping Nets at home, so that should be an easy win. So it really is, I think Heat will definitely be hoping that, you know, Hawks lose tonight, so that, you know, they're alive for the last game, and maybe the Hawks play the full strength team. But look, that's their squabble as such. This is the Hawks's. That's going to do for this week in the Hawks. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy, you know, give it a retweet or something. That's always appreciated. Spare the love. But the word I'm looking for is share the love. It's always appreciated. And until the playoffs, baby. Until the playoffs.